Hey, Jopke, you look nice today.
Yes, Jopke, yes, thank Jopke. You, thank you.
You came handsome.
Yeah, all the way from Australia.
Yeah,
New Zealand.
No, for the people watching, and some of them might even recognize his sexy voice. We have a special guest today, Danik.
Don't panic.
Don't panic. Listen to yeah. Danik. Is that still your thing? Like, you're still your quote?
Yeah. So for some people, it is. Yeah. Yeah. For the first 100 fans, it is. No, yeah, it's still a gimmick that I did like 10 years ago, but nowadays I don't use it that much anymore.
Is that 10 years ago?
Because it's not techno anymore. It's not. You have to make it techno.
What is it that you play these days? Has it changed?
Yeah, of course, but it's still the because I was struggling with that during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, oh, I need to make different music, blah blah blah. I think everyone had a short insight like that. But then I was like, I talked to a lot of promoters. They were like, no, we book you because we know what to expect, blah blah blah. Of course, your sound evolves, but it still is the energetic Danik sound. And when I played the Rose Garden stage at Tomorrowland, I think it was right after the pandemic, and it was kind of a classic stage. And the set that I played there, I gained so much energy back from that, just because, and inspiration as well. As I was like, what am I doing? I should just focus on this high energy. I don't know how you call it, like big room groove or whatever, or progressive, anything that I played there. It still works and will work in 10 years, I guess. Obviously with some 2024 sounds and all that kind of stuff.
Some AI tools.
Some AI tools.
Yeah, actually, what I like about you, Dan, you're one of the few guys who always maintained a big chunk of your original sound.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I
like signature the, yeah, sound.
Thank you.
It is. And you see a lot
some
of...
Say it's, some say it's stubborn, maybe. I don't
Could
know.
Be.
But I think the same goes for you guys. I think if I think of Bass Jackers, it's still
Blaster
Jackers.
Oh, God! Yeah.
Call Jay Hardway.
Somebody needs coffee.
I already had two.
Yeah.
No, but I think the same goes for you, but it's still, even if you have more like a techno sound, a techno kick or something that sounds more like 2024, it's still you. And I think that's really important.
Hmm. Well, you can't fight the evolution. It's ongoing. We notice it a lot in our comments. Yeah, some people ask us to do the 2014 big room sound. But,
I see a lot of those comments. Yeah,
but it was 2014, and maybe at some point I might still think, well, fuck it, let's do it, because what I'm doing in the studio, I think the same goes for you. I just make what I like. I'm not gonna make something that I don't like. If I have to do that for 4 months, man, I would go crazy. For those who have the comments, shit evolves. And of course, there is this, sometimes this new thing comes along, and sometimes you just let the bandwagon go by. And there are those few moments or types of music that you think, well, wow, I actually like this. And
Or you just take some elements from things that you like and you implement that. And I think a lot of people that say they want the good, and it's like the golden era, right? What they call it. I think it's just the feeling that they're trying to explain. It's not like I want an exact copy of a 2013-14 song.
That's definitely it. Everything
I think what
new
Robert thing. Just released, right, with the old school sound, it's still Hardwell from 2013, but then with the new sauce, right? I think that's what they are trying to explain. If I can translate.
No, but it's true what you say, and it will never feel the same again, because that era has passed, and everything was new back then. It was a fun time. I still remember going to Miami, and those first few times Miami for us, that was the first time was, I think, 2012. And then 2013 and 14, you could see the streets and everybody was all dressed up, ready, totally EDM, you know. And at some point that mellowed a little bit down, and then the VIP clubs became a little bit more popular and people started to dress nice instead of crazy.
Nice.
And but yeah, it was just this phase, and everything was so new and everybody was exploring, you know. And that's something you cannot recreate. You cannot do it with the music. You you can dress that way and go to a party, but it would just be silly, you know.
It I was think that you hit the nail on the head time. With that everything was new. It was an upcoming trend. It was the big bang, especially in the States at the time. I think even for us as DJs, like everything was bigger and getting bigger and bigger. You could play like a demo for 30 seconds and people would go crazy on it. And also the hype on the internet was different.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
I was talking to a client about this, talking about that time. Like, I still remember that because that was like the Facebook era, right? And I still remember that if you did like a release on Revealed, for example, or on a label like Spinin, and or like a collaboration with you or with Hartwell, and if someone posted about you and tagged you, that could easily get me a couple of thousand extra followers.
Yeah.
Like that's how crazy it was, you know. Yeah. Like you could gain thousands of followers within days just by collabing with someone.
We were disappointed if our track didn't get a million views on YouTube within the first 4 days, you know.
Dude. Yeah. You're competing with crazy cat movies now, and
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the whole issue, of course, with social media, and I think that's the ongoing conversation that there's it's the grab of it. Everyone is the war on attention. For everything. So I see it with a lot of even my own fans. They're like, if I post something on Instagram just in my story and people are like, holy shit, what is this song? And I released that 12 months ago. And for them, it's like the first time they hear it. So even for us, of course, that's the main struggle right now, how to get noticed and how to not sell your soul by doing like a crazy TikTok or whatever. Just, you know, stay true to yourself, but still be able to.
Yeah, follow dances on TikTok, for instance.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest issue.
How do you find that balance? Because Ralph and I talked about this 1 or 2 weeks ago, and he mentioned like you did that video, Ralph, of you sitting in the studio with your fist bump.
Fist bump.
Yeah, like how do you find that balance, like? Knowing that you're in this competition for attention, at the same time you just want to make the music you want to make and not necessarily be part of that competition, but where do you find the balance?
You're asking Dan, right?
No, it's for Dan. Yeah.
Oh, it's for me. I thought it was wrong. I was sitting with my hands in the air.
Yeah.
I cannot recall that. I have
no. That's Ralph. Ralph made like TikTok video where he was like.
Dan, what I said was, it's not that I go crazy for TikTok or do dances or anything, but yeah, you feel a little bit silly filming yourself with your newest track, doing weird hand moves. That was actually the thing. When I look back at it, it's not me. Always, you know,
it's not you.
I think
Dead Mouse posted something about this, where he's like, why is everyone filming himself in the studio and doing some crazy move? Because at the same time, it's like a trend, right? Everyone is trying something, everyone's eager to have their music listened to a lot of people, and they try everything to break the algorithm, at least that's what I think. And sometimes they lose themselves, you know, and I think a lot of people. Especially on Instagram, and if you see something, I think you can instantly see if it's real or not, if someone is acting or, you know, out of their comfort zone. And some people, I mean, I'm not here to bash anyone. I mean, anyone that does that, and some people are really good at it, because if, for instance, Fisher, he's definitely not acting. This is the way that guy is, and he's just really genuinely, how you said it, touchable, like he's one of your best friends. Yeah. Approachable, like anything. And I see a lot of people try to do that as well, try to be funny, try to do, you know, sitting naked in a studio and try to gain some some
interaction. Actually, a good idea.
That's a great idea, maybe. No, but I mean, I think for everyone that is human psychology, if you go out of your comfort zone, people will also see that, and they will not buy it. So I think it's
subconsciously notice it that something's off. You know?
Yeah, exactly. You cannot act yourself to success. It's not not how it works. I mean, that's my humble.
So what do you do? Like, what is the Danic way? The authentic way to do it.
This is actually a recent thing that I just discussed with my video guy, because everyone's looking for content. I mean, I was, if I sit here in the studio and I record myself every day, like, hi, I'm in the studio, no one is wanting to see that every day. So I took my video guy to Asia, which was, well, pretty big investment, but for me it is an investment. I see content as an investment, and I said the only thing that I want from you is just record everything, and then we cut it down to
What you should do is record everything.
Everything. Yeah. No, but what I meant is, like, I started back in the days with front of house TV, and you know, all the vlog kind of style, and I think that works really well because it's genuine. It's genuinely me on tour, like, even complaining or and of course you still edit it down to, you know, things that can be shown that says it, but you know what I mean. It's the real life in a sense, and it's me having fun and not trying to do anything.
It would also be real if you show the stuff you cannot show. I would like that.
Yeah. For sure. But sometimes that, you know, the humor that I have is maybe totally different than
you know,
Dutch humor.
Here in Holland we can be pretty sarcastic, and it's not the tone of voice that's
pretty direct
everywhere.
Well. Yes, exactly.
I noticed.
But just be genuine. I think to answer the question, I think being genuine and also show more personality instead of, hey, this is me in the studio, I make music and check out my music. That people are not really fond of that, I think.
Mm. Yeah, but it's also
anymore.
For me, it's kind of a process of just doing stuff. Sometimes stuff that you think that might feel cringe are not.
That's also true. Yeah.
So for me, sometimes, and that's what I discussed also with Joey, and then I recorded that video, looked back like, man, so it was a one-time thing. And it's not that I'm doing these crazy dance moves and shit, because, man, I've had talks with labels also, like, what the fuck do you think? I'm not going to do dances for TikTok. I'm not a clown.
Yeah.
And
is that what they request from you? Is that what they specifically
sometimes
request?
Sometimes they say, like, wow, it would be cool with these vocals to do a little dance. Hey, well, you dance, not me. I'm not a dancer.
Yeah.
Fine by me. But yeah. And that's also not, you have to stay true to yourself. And I totally 100%. Agree that being genuine, that's really appreciated by the people. And you can see it in a lot of artists. They're really genuine. Look at, for me, the biggest right now is Fred again, of course. He's really genuine. But also other guys, I just looked at Knock Knock or Knock 2. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. American guy. He's really like a unique character as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys are. And if you have to fake it with all these accessories and all that stuff, if that's you, that's fine. But most of the time, it's
about
you
people
down.
Can sense it, and I think that's what
definitely
we agree on. People can sense.
But it's funny also
fakery.
To see some artists going out of their comfort zone, and makes me laugh quite a few times, because you know, a lot of guys, you can see everybody searching their role on the socials, and I'm pretty sure there's a bunch of guys and girls who had quite a laugh about me as well sometimes, because it's nice to see some awkward shit.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, cringe shit is also very, very enjoyable.
But it's also like the more honest to just post it and fuck it. And even when you post it, that's when you can really feel the awkwardness, or not maybe, because it can also be like, oh, it's not that awkward anyway. Let's do it more.
I think James Lipp, he did this Q&A on Instagram, and this was one of the answers that he gave to people, like, one of the questions was like, how do you select the content for your, or how do you keep up with content? And he's like, I don't decide on the content. You guys decide on the content. So even if he's not 100% sure, he will just post it. At least that's what he said. And because he's like, yeah, even my art or his music, he said, I just throw it out there. And then, of course, there will be a lot of people that don't like it, but maybe more people will like it. So it's like that ratio.
He's also such a genuine guy, and I actually like his approach of being an artist, putting his stuff on SoundCloud, free downloads. I think he's a really cool, that's something we look towards and think.
Well, yeah, and he's adding value with everything what he does, of course, with his mixing and content-wise.
With that whole content idea of just getting... posting it and putting it out there, you know, like the I would completely agree with that, because I do believe that's the way to do it. It's fully authentic. But I know from experience, because of all the clients I talk to, is that that's the hardest part of doing that, is because you will get other people's opinions, you know. If you post a video from yourself doing that dance because you think that's funny, and some other people might not think that's funny, you will get other people's opinions. And most artists just are not that self-secure yet.
That's true.
And all those comments underneath those videos will touch you in a certain way, and that stops them from posting the content or releasing their music, or like that stops them from showing their full authentic self. And that's why I think that why Fred Again and James Hype, why they are so popular at this point, because they are embracing their full authentic self. They have
no limitations.
They seem to have a full self-secureness. You know, I'm not sure if they have some insecurities,
but they are genuine. Yeah, even if they show it, it's not like people are gonna dislike it because it's real.
Exactly,
and they get them even more fans.
Yeah, that's what people love. You know, like I think we live in times where we want to see real people, and where we want to see people who open up and show who they are instead of shoot. Remember the time where what we talked about, 2014, 2015, you only saw the same big stages with fireworks, and that's the only picture you saw of all the artists, like same picture, different artists. That's a one size fits all. And I kind of feel like we live in an age where people are done with that image. And we want to have authentic versions of people and not a one size fits all.
Yeah. In a digital world, more and more people are looking for organic, natural. I think that's also true for food. Don't panic, go organic. Wow. I'm going to write some notes down for this one.
Yeah.
What a
Denik 2.0
marketing agency with the three of us.
Denik organic, there's something here, man. A little bit of greenwashing.
By the end of this podcast, we'll have it. No worries.
No, well, yeah. But and Rolf, how are you and Marlon doing everything now? Is Marlon on the same side? Because Marlon is more like the show guy, of course.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that. Marlon has more a difficulty adjusting to the whole social media thing. He's, you know, I was recently discussing with him. You know, you remember, of course, Nope is Dope era and the whole, that's even before, that's 2010, 2009, something like that. And he did more tricks with his, as a DJ, he did more tricks, more looping, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and that's totally phased out. And what I see now also on the socials, because that's also nice of all the socials, it can actually influence you to do other stuff, which is actually really cool. Because I was talking to him also, I saw some guys doing loops on stage, and it looked really cool as well. It's James Hype does it all the time.
Do you mean the turntablism, like the looping of the song and stuff, like the DJ
and
skills?
Then, using your third table as well for a vocal or something like that. You just name it. Can be a simple trick, but just tricks, not just mixing the records together and then be done with it. And that's when we started to have a conversation, like, why don't we do that anymore? You know, you can do that on stage still. Why not? And then he said, yeah, that's actually thing. I don't do that anymore. And yeah, I totally phased out of my system. And then we started discussing, like, it's not only cool for the content, but it's just cool for the show as well, you know? And I think that's a cool way of the socials influencing you to do cool stuff again. I mean, it is a show eventually. Let's make it a show as well. And I actually like the, there's some pressure on you as an artist or however you want to call it, to make it entertaining and to step out of your comfort zone, which makes you grow, eh? To make it a little bit influence shit. But yeah, so yeah, that's what we talk about with Marlon. And Marlon, yeah, he actually gets a little bit, how do you say it? Excited, not excited, but the other one, nervous. Like, I have to do that again, you know? And of course, for him, it's different because I can record myself in the studio and when it's shit, I can do it again. But if he's on stage and there's 5,000-10,000 people looking at him and he fucks up, you know?
Yeah. So I think that's what we're discussing right now. That's the beauty of making errors, and people can tell then, because if you're like in a crowd of 10,000 people, you won't see him actually doing the tricks, but you will hear it. Even if he's like, you know, not completely mixing on point, then people are like,
it would
wait,
be also
this guy's
cool to
actually
own up to your mistake, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the honesty. And but that's also what we talked about of the hey, you are being watched, so you feel a little bit of a shame thing, or your ego is in there. I don't know what. I'm not a psychologist. It's Joey's work. And but yeah, he actually, that's the fun part of it. He has more of a hard time adjusting to it than me. Yeah, we are really busy with it. And really also, I'm an old dude and I browse on TikTok quite a lot. And my my biggest algorithm is hard techno.
Nice.
How cool is that?
But I think it's always also for Marlon. I think what he, if I see him on stage, he's always jumping. He's you know, and doing the CO2 gun. He's of course using the mic as well. That's something he didn't do before.
No.
At least not what I was touring with him in Australia back in 2013. So
he had quite a hard time adjusting to that as well back then.
Exactly. So I think he like, okay, I'm either going to do a lot of mixing tricks or show that I'm a real DJ, or I'm going to be here on stage jumping and entertaining the crowd in a different way. I think you have to balance that.
That's what I really struggle
with. And I'm that this is always the ongoing discussion with everyone. Like, will the crowd notice it? Will they even care? I would say it would be nice for Marlon to show that he's an experienced DJ and not just an act, of course. But a good balance between that without losing his stage presence. Because for me, it's the other way around. I like doing all kinds of tricks and stuff.
I know.
And I always, a lot of people told me, why aren't you like James Hype? Why don't you show that more? I'm like, yeah, you're completely right. Maybe I'm too shy about that, but I'm the other way around. I don't like really jumping on stage. If I do that, I'm either drunk or I'm high on adrenaline, but it's not something I would normally do. I'm usually more comfortable here in my studio.
Yeah.
But you started out as a DJ, right? Or did you start out as a music producer?
Yeah. So yeah, I started out as a DJ and also on weddings and all that kind of stuff, but just in a local bar in Breda. And I got taught by one of my best friends, Servi, and he's like an insane good open format all-round DJ. So he would mix up like a Dutch song of Jan Smit together with Michael Jackson and you know, all that kind of stuff.
That
now
works.
It's, I would say, even easier because we have the technology, you know, with the pioneers, you can do even more than back in the days. But he was already doing that with, DJ Gear Worms.
I don't old think school. A lot of people know that, but for me, a lot of Dutch DJs, you're one of them, Danik, are truly the best DJs out there. They've made so much flying hours. I think Danik also, when he started out, yeah, you did 3 shows a night from Thursday until Sunday. And I think people really underestimate the level of quality of the Dutch DJs. And there are so many, like Afrojack, really good. Sydney Sampson, dude, he's amazing.
Yeah,
yeah, Robert, you. Marlon also, he's a really good DJ.
Yeah, Marlon, but same goes for all those big DJs. And I think Afrojack does show it sometimes, but you know, with those big shows that they do, even Robert, he's an amazing DJ. He can mix hip-hop like crazy, but he won't show that on like the big stages because he's doing everything with the visuals and everything is synced. So he's... But for me, when I was going from the bars and being an all-round DJ to this more like house stuff and producing my own music, I was like, I was bored because it was like 1 minute intro mixing and then 1 minute outro. I was like, how can I make this more interesting? So I started, you know, doing the all-round open format kind of stuff that I did in between my shows. And a lot of people noticed that and they liked that. And of course, that's kind of how my whole career started, because I won a DJ competition, which like kind of kickstarted everything. But
I didn't know that. That's actually cool.
Dance Tour in 2009.
They had all these things. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I'm curious about, which you mentioned in the beginning, is like you kind of rediscovering your own sound at the show at Tomorrowland, where you kind of got the confirmation for yourself, like, hey, what am I doing? I should just keep doing what I did, you know. The period before that, so let's say from COVID until then, what kind of phases did you go through, if you could divide it into phases? Total despair, depression.
This is the phase that I went through. It was dark. It was it wasn't a good phase, but in the end, now when I look back at it, it was one of the best phases that could happen in my life, because before that I kind of went on automatic pilot. And I don't mean that I wasn't enjoying it anymore. It was just like everything was going on autopilot. I almost took everything for granted, you know. I noticed that you know, that the popularity was like kind of declining a little bit. And of course, I had to refine myself again, because all the people that were a fan since 2013, you know, after 4 or 5 years, they become, you know, older, they like more different music, etc. So the hardest part from an artist perspective is to, how do I get those young people to also listen to me and, you know, like me again. And that's where I kind of went into overdrive mode, into overthinking everything. And of course, for me as a DJ, I really miss the live shows, because that's where I get my inspiration mainly from. I think the same goes for Ralph and Marlon, where Ralph is, of course, always in his studio. Of course, he likes TikTok. He sees some trends on TikTok. But I think the input from Marlon is super important for him.
Yeah, really important.
To have a base, like a concept for bass jackers, you know?
No, but it needs to be effective. And and then the opinion of a DJ is really important. What you think of what might work doesn't always work. And
that's 100% true.
Yeah, somebody who's experienced, they definitely know better. Of course, sometimes we disagree, and then there's two versions, but he eventually just plays the one that he likes. And that's... That's 99 from the 100 times the best version to play, because he just knows better. For me, that's really important.
For the dance floor. I think if he would ask you for more like radio or stream or whatever, I think you would be more on point.
Then he doesn't even care.
Okay, yeah.
No, and you know, but I actually like it. And we talk a lot about how the show and how the set must be. And that for us is one of the main drivers of what kind of music we will make.
Yeah.
What type of BPM, because sometimes he just misses out his third or fourth track. And that's just lower in BPM. And then that kind of gives you a little bit of a barrier in which between you have to search, okay, this is what I'm going to make. and it defines your approach, and that's how we work. And I really like how that works, because mm-hmm. sometimes if it's like an open book or an open slate and you can do everything you want, it actually can backfire that you just don't know, because you can do anything.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you get distracted. You lose
it's
focus.
The abundance of choice.
Yeah. Sometimes that's nice as well. And just to make music for the sake of making music. And that's where you actually do the most fun stuff also. But it's just, I don't know, I experience that as draining, because, yeah, you have so much choices. And yeah, I actually like making a specific track for somewhere in the set. And yeah, that really helps out. I think that's why our music is our music.
Is that something Marlon asks you to do? Like, hey, I need something like this in my sets? Or is it something that you go, or like, okay, how can I make this set better? Like from the
producer perspective. No. We talk about it. Yeah, we really talk about it. And sometimes I hear him play and I say to him, dude, why do you play this track? Yeah, he says, I like it. I said, you're the only one. And let's switch it up. And then we go talk about it. And then sometimes it's nice to have a little bit of a discussion then about the type of music that he plays and or he wants to play. And it's also hard sometimes, because you do the club plays and you have the festival plays, which are, in my opinion, totally different.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I hear club sets, I hear him play records of 4 or 5 years old. I'm like, dude, come on, man, let's switch it up. But for him, that's nice. He just, those are at the beginning of the set.
Yeah,
usually.
Of course.
And I can imagine also him getting into his comfort zone and having something familiar in there. So
I agree with that. Yeah. Because you're familiar with it and you're like, okay, this is a club.
They always work those tracks, you know?
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with it, and it depends on which area you're or which country you're playing. Because I noticed, you know, depending on the country, sometimes people are not as educated as you think they are. So you
musically kind of, educated,
yeah, you naturally play some more classics. At least that's
And in the end, of course, it's about rave.
Yeah, but in the end, it's the balance between educating and entertaining the crowd. Mm-hmm. Because I would love to play only IDs the whole set, but it's not going to work. You know?
It's sometimes two for them, one for you, or one for them, one for you.
Yeah, that's great.
But I can also imagine it's also like a lot of people are just in the club or are at a festival to have a great time. Yeah. And they're not really into dance music per se. They like it, but they're
or they don't even know the DJ who's playing, to be really honest. You know, sometimes people just go to a club because
cater to them as well. And it's a totally different story when you play. I really like the Verknipt parties right now, or Rotterdam Rave, or all those kind of stuff. And that's a totally different thing, because the people who are there, they are really invested in the music. They know who's playing and what they are playing. They do the dress up shit again, which I really like, and
it's
makes
rave
me
culture,
think
right?
of yeah that makes me think of the 2014-15 times. I mean, mm-hmm. they are wearing clothes like, oof, it's far from me. Cannot see myself in that.
Yeah.
And but I really like it. I like seeing it. I like hearing it. And that's different. But for us, we're a little bit more mainstream. Let's call it like that. Mm-hmm. And then you have to sometimes also cater to people who are not invested in dance music or music at all. They just want to have a good time. And yeah, who are you to not give it to them?
I have a good example, because I played Lake Dance Festival. I think it was 2000, was the first year that it was again. Was it 2020?
22, then, I think.
22?
Yeah, we did it last year. It's a nice festival.
It's a super nice festival. I like it. I played it a couple of times, and that year I was playing after Funkerman, who's like one of my all-time idols, right? And I know he's a good friend of mine as well. And he obviously plays house, like real house. So 122 BPM, whatever. And I was playing after him, and then after me was, I don't even remember who. But I was like, it was the almost the middle of the day, like 2 p.m. somewhere, afternoon. The sun was out. It was super nice. And I was like, yeah, I can come here and start with my big ass festival intro. But I was like, no, I'm going to, because I like to play housey as well, or more like tech house. But then, of course, a little bit more energy than what Funkerman's playing. So I played that whole set and was super nice, and people were vibing, et cetera, et cetera. And then I obviously uploaded some things on my stories, and I got one message from apparently a fan, and he's like, it was a Dutch guy, and he's like, yo, I don't know what happened, but this set was so bad, blah blah blah, and this is not the Denik that I like, and I'm following you.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Obviously, from his perspective, I totally get it, because if you come and you want to see your favorite DJ and he's playing a different kind of set,
yeah.
But
in the end,
I was like, okay, but if you're really a fan, you know that I play sometimes. You know, I adapt, and there's a range of Denik. You know, there's more housey Denik towards,
yeah,
the big room stuff.
Definitely.
So this was like managing expectations, but I didn't manage it quite well, I guess. But it still got to me. Like, I was like, fuck, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And because that was one of the first festivals I did after the lockdown. So I was even more depressed. I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
And I was really happy with my set, because and a lot of people liked my set, you know. They were like, oh, nice, more housey, very cool.
Yeah.
And then I was like, it still got to me. And this made me insecure even. I was like, what
to
the
be
hell?
Honest, if you how you say it, for me, you actually did a really good job feeling the people and feeling the vibe. Yeah,
from a fan perspective, it's
they want to hear those classic Denik. They want, but I can also imagine if it's a quarter to three, you're not gonna blast out. What did you do with Hartwell? Survivor was a big one.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, just the big ass big sounding tracks. No,
EDM
it
songs,
wasn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling that was the right time. But
no,
of course,
no.
you could say like, okay, but yeah, you're the artist, so they're expecting to hear at least your top 10 on Spotify or whatever. But
When I was younger, by the way, I had this mixtape of Funkerman.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
I played it so freaking much. Insane.
Yeah, the Snickers time, man. Ooh, and the flamingo sound.
I don't even know what it was, but I played it a lot, and I can especially... it was the soundtrack for one of my holidays in Spain. I went there and worked there, and
nice memories.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he's also for me. I don't even know him. I've never met him. I wouldn't even recognize
him. Met him?
No. But to be honest, I don't know how he looks. I'm gonna look it up when we are done talking.
I think
he's always wearing a cap.
Based bald or something then.
He's always wearing a cap. No, he has medium short, medium long hair.
Okay.
Yeah. No, great guy. Like,
for me, he's a legend.
Genuine. Huh?
He is.
For me, he's a legend.
Yes.
Don't meet your heroes, Ralph. Don't meet your heroes.
Okay, then I'm not going to look. Hey, for me, I still have like this Brad Pitt vision.
Yeah, exactly. Keep it that way. No.
Do you also have like those sets in your life which you know so well because you've listened to them in eternity, that you know all the transitions of the songs?
For me it's but it's totally different. It's the Flexicon, the eclectic mix that he put out on SoundCloud.
Where and is that was... he he's coming back
really?
I'm not sure if he ever went away, but I was talking to someone yesterday who mentioned that he wanted to book him on his party, and I was like, he's getting
maybe
big on
for
TikTok
the people
again.
Listening, the Flexicon is like one of the producers from Boomaye with Major Lazer.
Boomaye.
And in the Netherlands he was known as one of the hottest Amsterdam DJs at the time, doing a lot of open format mixing and stuff, and
he
put out eclectic mixes, so mixing from disco to hip-hop and even some house, and it was super super cool. But the way he mixed at the time was really new.
Technically skilled, you know, it was a great
Very
DJ.
Very technically skilled, yeah.
Yeah. I think before him, you had Chucky, you know, he was like the new Chucky at that time.
But Chucky, I would say, is more raw, and he's more smooth.
Sophisticated. Yeah,
smooth mixing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I I guess he's making some sort of comeback because I'm hearing his name more often these days. So I'm not sure if he still does the same sound though.
Speaking of which, are you guys following another? The Dutch DJ duo?
No, I do know them though.
They have
from Relax
hit.
My Eyes. Yeah. I cannot sing, but
I love
those guys are like insanely popular right now. They're playing house music. And one of the latest posts on Instagram, you should look it up after the podcast. They are playing Gregor Salto with Bouncing Harbor, which is a track from 2007.
Dude, that song.
Toys Are Nuts in their sets.
Bouncing Harbor. Even, because you mentioned Chucky. Remix.
No, but like everyone is like, what is this track?
Yeah.
And the thing is, the usual thing they play is like super, I call it lady-friendly house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like good vibes and they're very popular, but it's so cool to see like the circle is going is round right.
Dude,
there
definitely. Honestly, Toys Are Nuts, that song, I still remember where I heard that for the first time.
Yeah,
like I was standing in 013, the pop center in Tilburg, at a show from Chucky and Real Canario. And he dropped it there, and I was like, I never heard anything like that. I was like, what the fuck is this? You know, I've been searching for that song for months, and then it came out.
And then you went on LimeWire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Went on LimeWire, like downloaded like viruses Soul-C. And stuff.
Oh man, good
but I actually mentioned this to a client of mine a couple of weeks, maybe months ago. I mentioned like you should look up Toys R Nuts and do a 2024 bootleg of it.
Yeah,
because I just think that sound, that melody, is so unique. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it still is. It's like, it's a classic.
Toys R Nuts doesn't really have a melody, right?
Yeah.
But the sound design was at that time very. Yeah.
How is Gregor Salto? Is he still DJing?
Yeah, he's still. Producing, but more Latin stuff, and he has like huge hits in Brazil and stuff. I don't know,
like more than African sound stuff.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's what he used to do.
And he's
I toured with him.
Really, really nice guy.
Yeah, I toured with him in South Africa.
Sorry, he did the remake of Can't Stop Playing with Oliver Heldens, of course.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah.
And Para Voce and Magalena.
Mm-hmm.
He still has almost 800,000 listeners per month.
So is 2024 making the revival of early EDM days?
Yeah, but in a new sauce, I hope.
There's just so much going on right now. I mean, like Another, I really like those guys. I always like the parties. It's really what you said, good vibes. There's no art stages. But you also have guys like Malon Hofstad, who do a really cool 90s revival thing, and DJ Daddy Trance, which I really like. That's actually what I really like of 2024. There's a lot going on.
I think, but it's not only there's a lot going on, but everything is mixed together. I mean, also John Summit is playing like Maddox's tracks on 140 BPM.
Oh, yeah, he plays like,
You know, so all the boundaries are gone almost. I feel like it's more mixed than ever. And of course, I think Robert, for instance, he wasn't expecting Charlotte DeWitt to play one of his songs, you know, because so everyone is picking stuff from everywhere, and also the BPM is changing, of course.
But maybe it's more an experimental phase because like everyone's kind of lost, you could say. So everyone's trying new stuff to find the new thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think people are lost. I think it's really clear of what everybody's doing. And you're saying John Summit and Dom Dolla. And we talked about this 2 weeks ago as well. That's the only thing that's really clear for me. The BPM has gone up quite a bit.
Did you see the comments on that post, by the way? A lot of people engaged with that post.
Yeah, I saw it. And most of them, they liked the 128.
Yeah,
right?
They used to play 128. And now it's more like 140, 50, I don't know.
Okay, because I saw it in the early stage, some of the comments. But I didn't follow through totally. So what was the conclusion?
out top of my mind, the conclusion was that most people turned up, as in play yeah. higher BPMs these days than they used to do.
Yeah, and that's for us also totally noticeable all across the board. You know, if the John Summits and Dom Dolas of this world play 140 BPM, yeah, what to expect next, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, you see the hard starters going 200 BPM.
200?
What?
That's weird. Am I still here? Because you guys are frozen.
Just
yeah, you're still there.
Oh. Hey,
play half speed and then mix it with hip-hop.
Like
that's what I said, Danny. I actually like
yeah,
it
just
better.
Mix Fatman Scoop in hardstyle. Do it.
No, but it's a more natural speed for vocals, 150. Then yeah. 128 is a little bit just in between stuff, and it can totally work as well. But it's kind of harder to fit in than 150. For me, that's... for vocals, really feels natural.
Yeah, it still depends on the song for me. I'm also always making a more melodic track right now, and it wouldn't, I wouldn't feel it at 128, but now 130, I'm like, okay, this is it.
Yeah,
but I usually do 128 still, and then I decide if I up the tempo or not. But I start on 130 always my sets.
Okay, sometimes it's great that just 1 or 2 BPM can make such a
yeah, but
totally
have you noticed
feel.
That when you're tired or, you know, when you have a hangover, if you listen to music, it's like, it sounds so slow.
Yeah, like your brains are slow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, when I stopped DJing, 130 was kind of the ultra max at that point.
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
it's the starting point.
Now
oh, how was your, you played a DJ set, right, Joey?
Yeah, half a year ago, which was fun. But I can't really say that it triggered me to do it again, but you know, it was fun to experience again.
And where did you play and what did you play?
What's the festival called again? It's on the tip of my tongue. Yeah, it's a pretty big festival in the Netherlands. But I played like a small stage, which was kind of fun because there were like old school fans as well, a couple of them.
Really?
Who really came for me because they noticed that I played again. It was just 5 people, but still. Okay.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. It's 5 people.
Yeah, so that was fun to experience. and it was just fun to kind of make the circle round, you know, like being back on stage, being fully comfortable with it again in a different life with my
no
new
pressure almost or a
yeah,
little
with my
bit
new
maybe.
Girlfriend, my brother came with me together with his girlfriend. Like it was just a whole different experience from the last times I did it. So it was fun to experience it and to make the circle round.
Nice.
Yeah. Listen, guys, I have to go. I have to get into the car.
Yeah.
Where are
but
you
it's
going?
Been really
to?
Fun. To the office.
Yeah, we got a guy in the two, jongen.
Yeah. I actually do have meetings, Ralph. I have coaching sessions.
Ah,
yeah, no, but still works. It's all open here. For the people who listen, it's an open book and no secrets.
Yeah, it's an open book. No secrets. I have a coaching session at the office right now in 35 minutes. And right now I'm in Breda, so I'm close to Dan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I should have come here. It's like right
yeah.
next to me.
And it's about a 30-minute drive, so I have to get in. Otherwise, I'm late, and I hate being late.
That's a good quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quality. Hey, and I mean, Jopke comes back at some point.
The 19th this week.
Do we keep Dan or Jopke? People can vote on it.
Do we have a vote?
Let's vote on it.
Voting.
You can also switch me for Jopke or Joey. People can make. You have to pick 3, and one has to do something else.
Can we do 4, or is it maximum of 3?
No, we can do 4. Like we can invite you anytime we want. So why not? It's fun.
Well, I'm open to anything. Cool. I liked it.
Will do.
That was fun.
Me too, Dan. It was great having you here, and great to
thanks
speak to you again. For the people also who are listening or watching, Dan asked us, is there something we're going to talk about or whatever? We don't prep. We just turn on the play button or the rec button and go with it.
And we go.
So, the first words me and Dan and Joey exchanged were really the first words. So...
Yeah,
exactly.
We're so genuine.
That's what we like to do.
Remember what you heard
first. So authentic, yeah. True. Okay, guys, I have to run. Have a great day. Dan, thanks for taking the time.
You guys have a good time.
Howdy.
Thank you. See you later. Good day.